So welcome back, everybody. We have two sessions now, two 40-minute sessions till the next break, with network break. And both of them seem very promising and very interesting. So let me introduce you to the next speaker, Daniel Kahn-Gilmer. He's a senior staff technologist, ACLU Speech, Privacy and Technology Project. And his topic is AutoCrypt, Email Encryption for Everyone. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for coming out. So I want to give a little bit of background about who I am and why I've come to this project, and why I want to try to pitch some of the ideas that we're working on within the AutoCrypt project, which is trying to make it possible to have usable email encryption. So a little bit of background about myself. I'm a technologist. I work for the ACLU, that's the American Civil Liberties Union, and I work in our Speech, Privacy, and Technology project because I'm interested in the ways that the technology that we use has an impact, a social impact, and a political impact on people's ability to speak freely, to have private conversations, to have freedom of association, to avoid censorship, and to avoid surveillance. I come to this work from a technical background. I don't have a legal background, despite working for an organization that's mainly a legal organization. So I'm a free software contributor. I work with several different projects, including GNUPG, which is one of the tools that people do use for encrypted mail today. I'm a Debian developer. I'm active within the IETF. I've been using encrypted email myself for over 15 years. So just to give a frame for, like, I've been looking at encrypted mail for a long time, and it's depressing to me that we haven't solved the problem. So let me just give a little bit of background about why I've started working with a number of other folks on AutoCrypt, and I'll get into what AutoCrypt is as a result of that discussion. So I started working on it because around November of last year, I suddenly started getting contacts from people who I work with who said, hey, that information security thing that you've been talking about for many years, I suddenly realized that maybe I care. Could you help me come up to speed? And the first thing that I'm interested in is my email. Help me protect my mail. So I don't know who here has contacts or people outside of your organization or people inside your organization who come to you with those kind of questions. There's a few hands that come up. For me, when I hear this, my first response is, as someone who understands this stuff deeply, who works on the software that handles encrypted mail today, my first response is, well, do you want the short version, which will take about 2 hours, after which you will be able to do nothing? Or would you like the long version, which takes about a week, and then you'll still need to come back to me after a month and try to find somebody else who will do the same thing with you, and maybe then you'll have encrypted communication between a couple of people? So we've really actually failed to get encrypted mail out there. So the most common response that I hear today when someone says, help me protect my mail, is don't use mail, right? If you want to have secure communication, give up on mail. There's lots of folks who have said this, including a lot of people who I respect. And there are a bunch of different messaging applications that are out there that aim to provide some kind of replacement, many of which actually have better security properties than it's hard to get worse security properties than standard email. So many of these have better security properties to begin with. You probably recognize some of these logos. But the trouble with all these different things, this is an anonymized version of someone's actual signature. It says, hey, if you want to reach me, here's a bunch of different ways that you can reach me. Here I am on Keybase, on Wickr, on Threema, on Ricochet. This is an actual list from someone's email who is active in trying to help people get more secure communications. This isn't a reasonable way to figure out, like, this person has to manage communications on a dozen different platforms. And when they're talking to somebody else and saying, how can I get in touch with you? They're like, well, here's this huge range of options. What if that other person wants to talk to another person? What if those folks don't choose the same options? There's a whole bunch of fragmentation in the messaging space. And you'll note that at the top of one of these things, it is actually an email address. So in spite of all of the fragmentation, people will still actually have an email address. Email persists because we've been using it for work. If you get a job, one of the first things you probably get is an email address. People still do personal personal communications with it. It's also the backbone for authentication in a lot of situations. So if you get locked out of your social media account, can you get back in? Can you get your password reset? You can get it reset because of your email, right? There's a set of different things that we just sort of rely on email being there as a backstop for. So email is going to continue to exist even when all of these other more secure messaging apps are out there. And I think we owe it to the community to try to ensure that we can level that up. So one of the reasons that it continues to persist is because of its federated nature, right? So over here, you've got like, this is like your iCloud, your iMessage folks who are all talking to each other through a cloud of servers that are run by one organization. And here's your WhatsApp messengers that are all talking to each other over a cloud of servers that are run by a different organization. But you'll note that these guys can't talk directly to these guys, right? And of course, with email, we have this federated arrangement. The federated arrangement is a tenuous one. It's one that continues to need work, but it is present, and anybody with an email address can usually send email to anyone else with an email address. So the presence of the federation is useful, and it's useful because these centralized services, the stuff that was on the left there, they have that issue of having sort of disjoint communication sets. They have an opportunity for where there isn't a disjoint communication set, where everyone is communicating together, there's centralized metadata, right? Whoever's operating this cloud here can see everything about who's talking to who, right? Similarly with this cloud. Over WhatsApp, the folks who operate the WhatsApp servers have that sort of centralized metadata. So this is a problem when you're approaching these systems from a point of view of how can we defend against surveillance. There are also single points of failure, right? If one of these systems goes away, right, if, say, Signal decide to close its doors, everybody who has a Signal account was just out of luck. There's no other Signal server that stood up that people will know to automatically switch to. There's no fallback. Whereas if one node in the email federated system goes down, the rest of the email system will continue to work. So email has there are some steps being taken to provide some level of encryption. This the transport of mail itself is starting to be encrypted. We actually have pretty good numbers on that now. That's using Start TLS. So in this drawing that I've got here, these nodes here are the end users, and these are mail servers. And pretty much all of these blue links, end users to their own mail servers, are encrypted these days. And the connections between mail servers are pretty much encrypted these days. But the messages that are sent between those mail servers, each of the mail servers get to see all the messages. So it's not end-to-end. And actually, if you look at the details for how these links are protected, they're actually not strongly encrypted. Because the authentication, there's sort of an open question about authentication, and actually it's spoofable. We have a lot of evidence of networks that just strip the announcement that Start TLS is even possible. So there's steps to improve that, but and we need these steps to be done. We need this transport encrypted. However, it's not sufficient, even if you were to succeed in fully doing that, because you shouldn't have to expose the content of your mail to your mail provider. So we have had end-to-end encrypted email for pretty much 20 years. It's been possible for 20 years. Who here uses email? Who here's asleep, right? So pretty much everybody's hand was up. Who here uses encrypted email, end-to-end encrypted email? So this is a room full of nerds who do this stuff, and we still hit maybe 60%, but not the same number of hands that went up for using mail. So who here used encrypted email in the last day? So that's like the highest number of proportion of hands that I've ever seen, and it was probably 10% of the room actually used encrypted email in the last day. So for myself, I just like did a little pull of my own message store of about 15 years of messages, and these are percentages of the messages in my mail store that are encrypted, including messages I sent and messages that I received. None of these years along the bottom ever got above 4%, never even got to 4%. And the mean is just under 3% for me in terms of the messages in my mail archive that are actually encrypted. So adoption is terrible. This means that while we've had these standards around for years, they haven't worked. They haven't worked because people simply don't use them. So the question that that should raise in your mind, of course, is why aren't people using it? It's actually, people are interested in having encrypted email. People come and say, hey, help me set my email sorted out, but they don't use it. They don't use it because of the 1,000 paper cuts that come from encrypted mail. So I sometimes like to do a little exercise where people can sort of shout out paper cuts that they've seen with encrypted mail if they're used to it. I don't know if anybody wants to. I'm not going to go through the full 1,000, but anybody have an example of one of the things? Sorry? So it's difficult. The comment was, my grandmother's using it. It's difficult. So I apologize. I tend to not like to use grandmother as a non-technical user because as an industry, we have a problem with, I think, ageism and sexism. And so the baseline assumption that older women are non-technical is one that I have a problem with. But I agree with you about the general point that non-technical users have a really hard time doing it. So that means that, and of course, you need both parties to do it. So if you want to send email to someone who's non-technical, you're just not going to be able to because they're not going to be able to. So both parties need to be able to do it. Anybody, any other? Client support, right. Not every email client actually uses it. A lot of people have moved to webmail, which doesn't do it at all.
Not searchable,
right. So we've made these decisions about how should encrypted email work that says we have to absolutely protect against everything. And that means that when you get an encrypted message, it should just be totally opaque to everything. Your mail user agent shouldn't be able to do anything with it. And yet people want to search their mail. I don't know about you, but I've definitely found myself when using a mail user agent that won't let me search my encrypted mail, deliberately not encrypting a message to someone else because I know I'm going to want to search it later. So rather than protect myself against everybody in transit, I've decided to not protect myself against anybody simply because my mail user agent decided it couldn't defend itself against my indexer. So there's a weird trade-off that we've made of like, we have to make these things 100% secure, which then in the real world means users decide to step away from them because they have workflows that they need to be able to do. Any others?
Keys,
exactly. Key management. I've actually got a whole slide on key management that I'll get to. So anyway, I'm gonna move past this, but just there is a litany of problems that people have where suddenly I get email that I can't read, or it basically makes it so that people try it a little bit, and then they say, this is actually super hard, and if I can't get a base of users doing it, it's not worth it to me. One of the reasons I think that we've done this is because as a community, we have prioritized the idea of building powerful toolkits, which is awesome. If you're a nerd, if you're like me, you want the flexibility and the power. And so we've prioritized that because that sort of makes a lot of developers excited. The trouble is that for users want to know what's the sensible thing to do. And they don't have a lot of experience with it necessarily. And so we have sort of what we've been doing, which is we focus on all the different capabilities you might want to have. We want flexibility and power. And then we have what users actually want, which is, I've got a task that I'm trying to get done. I don't want to make extra decisions if I don't have to make them. And I want it to be easy. And so we've been traditionally working on this left-hand side. And I think if we actually want adoption, we need to focus on the right-hand side. The other reason that I think we're running into this trouble is what I call the curse of the deployed base. And this is not just an issue for email. This is an issue for pretty much every protocol that I work on, whether it's transport layer security or the domain name system or IPsec or whatever, which is that you have somebody, this is a communications protocol, you're working with somebody else that's out there, and your decisions have to be made sort of in coordination with them. There's no flag days, there's no opportunity. I mean, some people would like there to be flag days, and sometimes you can force a flag day if you're a big enough actor in the space. But mostly it requires coordination. So again, this is sort of the deployed base, which is what email is in. And then all the new messaging apps get to be in this other side of the space where they have a fresh start. They don't have to have any sort of intermixed stuff. And I don't believe that if we fix email, if we actually make it usable to have encrypted email, that every email will be encrypted. There will continue to be clear text email for as long as there are websites that run HTTP, right? We've actually made great strides in getting HTTP to move to HTTPS, but there's still a lot of websites that use HTTP. We haven't made strides anywhere near that far in email. because of this deployed base issue as well. So here's my key management slide. The basic questions about key management. How do you know if you've got your peer's correct key? What if your peer's key changes? Who do you trust in order to verify a key? But really, the underlying key management problem is, for most people, is what the hell is a key? And everybody in this room, I think, understands what keys are. But in practice, the person who's going to try to use these tools, again, they've got something else to do besides key management. And one of the advantages of the instant messaging apps, the more secure instant messaging apps, is that they've punted on that question. And they've said, we're going to answer all of those questions for you. You may not like those decisions, but if you don't like them, that's fine. You can go use a different instant messaging app. And we're not going to tell you about keys, because our job is messaging, not key management. So if we want to actually try to get crypto deployed, then I think we have to take these factors into consideration, right? If your crypto that you're deploying isn't useful for most people, particularly for communications crypto, then it's never going to actually achieve any sort of positive effect on a large group. We have to cultivate a community of people together to work on these things. If the community is not active, then you end up with either one centralized point of control or no action at all. It needs to be sustainable, right? And we need, but at the same time, many of the decisions you need to make in order to get to a usable place will not be as secure as the models that we have, right? As the unsearchable email or as the like strong key management scenario. If we're going to do something like this that makes things usable, it means taking users who don't know how to answer a given question and saying, we've got a standard answer for you that will work. And that means that a user who varies slightly from that answer or who has a different model, a different concern, a different adversary, might not be as well protected as they would have been had they been doing the fully secure thing in the first place. So that's sort of a distressing scenario to realize that we're going to provide something that's worse than what we currently have available to people. But the fact is that we can get a broader, we can get more of an information security across society if we provide a way to sort of replace the clear text. But we need to be careful to say we're just replacing clear text. We're not actually trying to replace the people who have already decided to opt in and do the strong stuff. So it needs to be actually connected and allow people to transition into doing stronger things if it's possible for them to do that. Ultimately, though, usable tools means security at scale. People often pit usability and security against each other, and I think that's a really toxic assumption. It's a common assumption, and we need to be pushing back on that, because ultimately the more secure, the more usable something is, the more likely people will use it, which means more actual real-world security. So what's AutoCrypt got to do with this? AutoCrypt is a group of different mail user agent developers that are working together to build common expectations around what encrypted email should look like and making sensible, opinionated decisions on behalf of the users. The goal is to basically replace clear text mail and not to replace any PGP MIME or SMIME or whatever. If you want to do PGP MIME or SMIME, you can continue to do it, and it should be able to be interoperable with AutoCrypt. But most users, when we have someone who comes to you and says, hey, help me figure out my email, what I want to be able to say to them is, you have to use an AutoCrypt-capable email program to check your mail, at least sometimes. So you have to use a mail program. Maybe that means an extension for your webmail. Maybe it means a separate program. But you have to use an email program. You can only read your encrypted messages on that mail program. They'll be unreadable elsewhere. And as soon as you've received an email from somebody else who's also using AutoCrypt, you can send them encrypted mail. That's the model that I want to be able to say. Because if I say that, then I can say, now come back to me in a month. I've given you something relatively simple to do. You can tell your friends to do something that's relatively simple. And if you come back to me in a month, we can talk about how things are going and whether you've actually managed to encrypt some mail. So that's the extent of what I want to be able to say to someone, rather than the two-hour talk or the week-long discussion and workshop. And AutoCrypt, the goal of AutoCrypt is to get something like that to be useful and to not have it be one single mail client, but say any AutoCrypt-capable client. So get mail user agents together to say, if you implement it this way and I implement some of the similar things, then we'll actually be able to interoperate properly. Someone who's really interested might get a little bit of an extra spiel saying, with AutoCrypt, it's possible for me to encourage you to send me encrypted mail automatically. So I should be able to say I really do prefer encrypted mail, and that preference should be expressible in the protocol. For developers in AutoCrypt, we're looking to say, look, our goal here is to optimize standard workflow. So if there's a particular way to do something with email that, you know, the sophisticated advanced users have figured out, automate that. Make that very easy to do for the end user. Right? Be opinionated, make a specific decision, and actually push that through. So in order to make this something that people can use, you don't want them to have to make a decision if there's a standard thing that other people do. And I can give a couple examples of that. So one example from the key management side of things is, say you don't have someone's key, what do you do? Anybody here who's used encrypted email, what do? So we've got GBG minus minus search keys. We've got ask them, right? So those are both reasonable approaches. But look it up in the LDAP directory. So there's a bunch of different things you could do. If any of those things ultimately fail, you do just fall back to asking them, right? If the LDAP directory or the key service fail, you just end up asking them. And when you ask them, then they respond and they send you their key. So that's the fallback that everyone has when the key servers fail, when the LDAP directory fails. So we should just be doing that automatically anyway. You don't need to actually ask someone for their key if every time they send you an email, you've got their key. So just this is an opinionated recommendation. Yes, the key servers will still work. Yes, the LDAP directory will still work. But every time I send you an email, it should silently in the background just give you my key so that when you're ready to send me email, you can get it. So that's an example of like an automated, opinionated thing that people end up doing anyway that we shouldn't have users have to do consciously. For developers, we also expect to have multiple levels of implementation so that you can build out something that is level zero compliant, and then we have some plans for what level one and future levels will end up looking like. I'll talk about those in a minute. But one of the goals here is to ensure that mail user agent developers talk to each other about what a mail user agent does. If you look at the way that web browser developers talk to each other, they talk to each other about not just protocol elements and bits on the wire, but models of internal state about how a web browser works. And in practice, mail user agent developers don't do that. We understand what a mail message is. We understand SMTP or EWS or IMAP. We understand the protocols. But mail user agent developers don't talk to each other about the concepts that they have internally in the way that a browser vendor will talk to another browser vendor about origins or local storage or things like that. So we need to be able to have those conversations in a clear language. So level zero is an experimental approach that multiple mail user agents are implementing today. It's off by default, so users also have to go in and say, turn it on. It works for a single device. It's not multi-device. It does not protect the first message in any communication, and it doesn't provide any defense against an active attacker. Many of these are terrible properties, but they're better properties than clear text mail. So the approach here is we want to make something that we can give people a simple mental model for that will be better than clear text mail. The way it works, we've got a header that we're defining for mail. So when Alice has turned on AutoCrypt, she sends an email to Bob. It includes the key. Bob's client understands that the key is part of the message, incorporates it, and the next time Bob sends it back to Alice, the message will be encrypted. And it'll include Bob's key, and then Alice can reply. So very simple approach. You'll note there's also this prefer encrypted equals yes, which is a way that Alice can signal to Bob that she prefers messages to be encrypted. So Alice can sort of set Bob's defaults when Bob is mailing Alice. That's a useful thing in terms of social adoption. For future levels, we want to get a bunch of nice features, but if we can't even get to level zero, then these features, I think, are kind of too much to push for too fast. But I would love to get to some of these. I'm going to skip past them because but I'm happy to come back if folks have questions. So again, the baseline motivation here is we want to do better than clear text. We want to do that for lots of different people. We don't want people to have to give up their existing email addresses. This should work with any email account. And it may mean that it's less secure than what we currently believe email security looks like. All of those things are really important to remember, to keep in mind, because the goal here is adoption, and we haven't, and something that the email encryption community has failed at for 20 years. So if we can get a baseline adoption that's less secure, that's a better situation. From a usability perspective, we want the users to have almost no training, like I said. We want there to be almost no UI. There will be some UI. The UI will probably be an encrypt button in your when you're composing a message. Again, same user account, and indexing and archives should probably be handled the way that you handle any other mail. If you don't do that, then people are going to drift away from using it for that reason. And lastly, we have this idea that we really want to encourage this as a social adoption process. One of the reasons that people haven't adopted email, encrypted email is because they know the work that they put in to get there. And in order to get somebody else who they talk to get into it, they feel like they're going to put them through that work. One of the things that we've been presenting privacy as an industry, as a problem, as a sort of individualized problem, or maybe as an organizational problem, for many years. But in communications privacy, my privacy is your privacy if I send you mail. So when I'm protecting myself, it's because I also have data that is yours, and vice versa. And so the goal with AutoCrypt is to make it so that people who are working on it, people who are sending each other email, can use that communications channel to encourage better adoption. So make it easy and friendly to help people opt into something that's not going to be a lot of work for them. Use the existing social networks to encourage adoption instead of having the, instead of feeling stymied and saying like, oh, I don't want to ask you to go through all this hassle. So we have social engagement of the developers via discussion, for documented formats, clear expectations, and we have social engagement of the users based on ease of use and friendly interactions. And we, if the users can see those benefits, that will help people feel like they're doing better. So we have some interesting ideas on sort of gamifying interactions for users, and if the mail user agent is capable of doing it, to help you say like, hey, you know, that graph that I just showed you, what if you should see that graph and you could see it going up? What if you could look at your list of people who you send mail to and be proud of the fact that you're able to send encrypted mail to some large percentage of that? What if we could encourage you to bring other people in rather than making you feel bad for bringing other people in into something that would be a hassle? So there's a bunch of different mail user agents that are actively implementing this. There's ongoing discussion. You might recognize some of these logos. You might not recognize any of them. We don't have any of the very big mail providers involved right now, big email clients involved right now, but if there are folks who are working on bigger mail clients or smaller mail clients, we're happy to be in conversation with you about it. The underlying protocol for the encryption that we're using for the actual encryption is almost irrelevant here, despite Matt's talk this morning about we need the protocols to be fixed. We also need the upper parts of the stack fixed, and AutoCrypt is a project that's working sort of on the other end of the stack. We're using OpenPGP internally. There's probably would be no objection to using SMIME if people want to do it, but again, the goal is interoperability with existing implementations that do encrypted mail as well. So here's places that you can get involved if you're interested. I want to give people an opportunity to ask questions or express horror at some of the things that I've said here. I know that for myself, 5 years ago, I would have looked at this and said, you're doing a terrible thing. What you're doing is you're providing people with false sense of security. You're providing people with things that are not as secure as we know how to make them. But in practice, what we've done is we've provided people with nothing for 20 years. And so so I've come around to the idea that if we want to get something done, we need to give people an easy step in, and we need to help people actually convince other people to participate instead of feeling like they're placing an obligation on them. So if folks have questions, I'm happy to take questions or critiques. Yeah?
I have a question. Cryptography shall cover privacy, integrity, and authenticity. So I think we can cover privacy and integrity, but how do you do handle or plan to handle authenticity?
That's a great question. So the authenticity side of things would again probably devolve to some level of key management. And with AutoCrypt, there's no discussion of keys. The user has never seen the concept of a key in a clean AutoCrypt client. So one of the ways, how do people currently handle authenticity in their clear text mail?
Fingerprints?
No, in their clear text mail.
Oh, clear text, no, not at all.
No, they do. They look at the from line and they remember whether this is the person that they think it is, right? So that's the bar that we have to do better than. Okay? So what we can provide people with is something that's marginally better than that bar, which is that we can tell them that this message comes with the same. We can give them an indication that this identity is the same identity that they've seen sending mail over the last n times, for example. I don't think that'll be part of level zero. With level zero, we're focusing specifically on encryption and not worrying. We're kicking the key management can down the road, which is what many of the instant messaging apps do as well, right? But we're basically kicking that can down the road with the idea that if you encrypt first and ask questions later, then you actually defend against a broad swath of passive attacks that we currently don't defend against at all. So bringing in authenticity, I would love to talk more about ways you might represent authenticity to users in a useful way. If you have ideas, I'm definitely open to them.
Key pinning would be the first step that no user needs to be involved in, I guess.
Right. So the trouble with key pinning that I've seen is what happens when it does change. Yeah. And there are lots of reasons why it changes, right? And then you get, it's that transition stage where you have to sort of think through what do you present to the user and how do they distinguish the typical, like, I flushed my phone down the toilet and had to get a new one with there was a malicious adversary who swapped out my keys. So, but yeah, that would be a useful step.
You mentioned early one of the uses of email is the social media providers and other instant messaging providers and so on sending you a password reset message through email.
Yep.
But how do they get your key? I mean, you're normally putting in your email address into whatever backend database, and then there will be a PHP script or whatever, which is looking in that database and getting your email address and then using the PHP mail function or hopefully something better. But the point is, where is it getting your key from?
Right. This is a great question. In AutoCrypt level zero, we probably will not be able to provide encryption capability for those emails because the user never actually sends mail to the service that does that, right? The user usually gets an email from the service and then clicks on a link but never actually sends them mail. There's an alternate workflow for that, which is that when I send you the email verification, it says, just reply to this mail and you'll be in. And then when the mail comes in, then you've got their key and then you can use it. So for a provider that wants to do that kind of work, they can do that in that same way.
As a software engineering matter, do you also have the people who are doing that kind of web backend mail system? Do you have them involved also?
There are a bunch of different people working on this. So one of the pieces that's in place is actually a bot that will happily like chat AutoCrypt with you. If you send an email, it'll send you back something with a key, and you can test whether your mail user agent does it. I don't think we have anybody who's doing network like web authentication backends right now, but that would be great. If you know people who are interested in that, I'd be happy to talk to them about how it might be useful for them.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks. So I can, if folks are up for just a little bit, this is the thought of what we actually would like a mail client to look like. This is a mail client logged in as Alice. Do I have a minute or two?
Yeah.
So Alice should be able to write a mail to Bob, and note that there's no way for Alice to encrypt a message to Bob. This is level zero, so it's off by default. But she can say hello, and here's her mailbox, which shows a message from Alice to Bob. So this is just a dummy mail client. She can go to her preferences, though, and say enable for AutoCrypt. And then she can write a message to Bob. And it says, if you want to encrypt to Bob, ask Bob to enable AutoCrypt. So I'm going to switch over to Bob's mail client. So I'm now logged in as Bob. And Bob sees these two messages from Alice. So I guess I need to figure out how to enable AutoCrypt. So I'll go and enable AutoCrypt. And now I just have a check button, and that's it. That's what we should ask a user to do.
Uh,
just to go back to the fact that you've, one of the flags you say is on only one device, is that because of the key management?
Or? It's because of key management, that's right, yeah. If you do it on multiple devices, then, so let me actually back up a second. The reason that we say it's on one device is because we care about predictable unreadability of messages. And because we care about that, the key management suggests that we need to do it only on one device initially. So when I say predictable unreadability of messages, we want to give the user a very clear mental model that says, if you get encrypted mail, it will be unreadable in some places, and it will be readable in other places. And what we really don't want users to see is, what the hell, I've got this mail that should be readable by me, it's encrypted, but I'm unable to read it. If it's too complicated to explain to people why they can't read why a message is unreadable, then we've failed. So the simple answer is, you read your mail on your autocrypt-capable device, on non-autocrypt-capable devices, and on the server, and anybody else who happens to get a copy of it, they won't be able to read it. So that's the trade-off that we have to ask people to make. That's like the one paper cut that we can't fix for people, which is you're not going to be able to read your encrypted mail on any arbitrary device. So given the way that we're implementing this stuff, the one device is a way to sort of get the bootstrap going. We do have plans for multi-device that will involve synchronization across devices so that the keys can be shared. But in order to get off the ground, we're going to say one device as the initial thing. Clever users, I'm sure, will be able to make it work on multiple devices as well for level zero. But we want to provide a simple model otherwise. So
is this a commercial product or is this?
This is not a product. This is a project of a bunch of different developers that are actively working together and trying to make things that will be interoperable. We really want to avoid the problem of having single points of failure, and we want to avoid people needing to switch to a different centralized routing infrastructure. So if you write a mail client, or if you know folks who write a mail client, or you're thinking about these questions, come and talk to us, because we want that experience, and we also, you know, we want to make sure that what we're designing is going to work for the existing mail user agents that are out there. So, cool. All right. Thank you very much.